The Breakfast Club.
Hot day in Melbourne Town, hot weekend ahead. Perfect weather for balloons, you would think, again this morning. I'm yet to see one, but I'm hoping that there's a couple in the air. Adam White can see the window better than I can. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. It should be. It should be. It was almost identical yesterday morning to this morning.
Well, but we didn't see any yesterday morning either.
No, that is true. That is true.
Now, so my heart hurts just a little.
Now, we're talking about your heart. I'm sure your head's hurting at the moment because you talk about following the bouncing ball and all these sorts of things.
Yep.
That ball is bouncing in all sorts of different directions for you at the moment. You were supposed to be playing the Bulldogs.
Yep. Sunday.
Were you already supposed to have been playing the Bulldogs at another time? Or?
We were supposed to have played the Bulldogs. No, this was the scheduled. This was the scheduled Bulldogs encounter last week.
Where are you playing this weekend?
Well, of course we're playing. We're not playing this weekend.
Are you not?
We're playing on Tuesday night.
Oh,
Tuesday night football.
Sterling Cup.
Sterling Cup. East Fremantle are playing South Adelaide.
Yeah.
In the Sterling Cup. So we're Tuesday night at Metricon Stadium on the Gold Coast against the Brisbane Lions.
Right.
Mm.
Well, that's going to be interesting.
So fair to say, at 4 o'clock, when we found out that news yesterday, there was some scrambling to find staff, firstly, and then work out if our players could get there.
Right.
For work and
when will you go up there?
So we'll go Tuesday afternoon.
To play Tuesday night?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You're right.
Unusual.
Follow the bouncing ball. Like, it's been one of those, it's just going to be one of those seasons, I think, certainly for us. But I reckon there'll be an element of this that will go through with the men's competition as well, that teams may not be able to field lists to get out there and compete on the weekend. And what the AFL do about all this is going to be fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So we're supposed to play Brisbane last week in Brisbane on, what was it supposed to be, Saturday night? I can't remember. And then we ended up playing Geelong in Geelong. And then we're supposed to play Bulldogs this week. I'm going to play Brisbane on the Gold Coast on Tuesday. Gold Coast and the Bulldogs again aren't playing. So the Dogs are two games behind. This is a very interesting part of the conversation. The Dogs now have two games to make up. I don't know how they do that.
No, this is the thing. And the other part about it is that it's okay to sort of mix and match your fixture early in the season when you haven't played too many teams. But it'll get to the point where, say, in your situation, you go, you can't play Geelong this week. And you go, oh, that's all right, we'll put Carlton against Richmond. Oh, no, they've already played Richmond.
Mm.
We'll put you against North Melbourne. Oh, no, they already played North Melbourne as well. Who are we going to put Carlton against? What team can we put them up against? Because, you know what I mean? Like, that's going to happen more and more as the season progresses.
So for the last couple of weeks, like, the teams that couldn't field a side last week were the Bulldogs and Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
So the teams that were playing those two teams played together. That was us and Geelong.
Mm.
And then this week, the Bulldogs and Gold Coast are having troubles. Now, Brisbane were going to play Gold Coast. We were going to play the Bulldogs. So we just had those teams come together again. So Brisbane and Carlton play. So it's not sort of convoluted in the other games at this stage. But there may get to a point, as you rightly say, where it's going to be a fair challenge for those boffins in the computer room putting the fixture together to work out how to do it.
And so, excuse me, in the Premier League at the moment, I've talked about this before, about how crazy their table looks because of coronavirus and teams unable to play and whatever else. So you've got a situation at the moment where Manchester City are on top with having played 22 games, Liverpool second with 21 games, Chelsea third with 23 games, West Ham fourth with 22 games, and then Tottenham fifth with 19 games, and Arsenal in position six with 20 games. So of the top six, there's only two teams that have played the same amount of games. The maximum being 23, Chelsea.
So there's a three-game gap.
Four-game. And they're only halfway through their season, or just a little bit over. So whether that ends up, excuse me, happening with the AFL season, and whether you've got, I talked before yesterday, I think it was, about match ratio coming back and all these sorts of things. Or by the time the AFL season starts, which is, mid-March, so we've still got 2 months, maybe it's all gone away.
What's gone away?
COVID. Omicron.
You're making it a bit more harder than it is.
Yeah, I know.
John off the SMS is sort of around that that theme, making it go away. And one of the theories was to make it go away just to get it. And you'd be okay. If you're an AFL team, John says off the SMS, would you consider sitting everyone in a room and making them get COVID? You have a week off now during the preseason and the real season doesn't get interrupted. Now, I think there was an element. Now, this is absolutely without any substance. Well, that's not quite without any substance. There's a little bit of substance to it. But no fact. Here we go. No official fact and knowledge. That perhaps there were some players and people out there in the AFL system that were happy to sort of roll through it through December. Maybe contract it and see what happens.
COVID parties.
Well, not necessarily COVID parties, but just if it happened to be in an area that was, you know, rife with it, they'd pop through and say g'day.
Mm.
Maybe. Who knows? But the problem now is this strain of the virus, there are reports of reinfection.
After 1 month.
Well,
the possibility of being able to get it again after 1 month.
So within 7 or 8 weeks is what I've been told, that people have been, within the industry, have been reinfected, some people. So the one, I think it's Delta, there was a theory that if you got it once, then you should be right for the next little while. Whereas this one, this strain, the high likelihood of reinfection and quickly takes that sort of suggestion away from John. There's no point getting it because you might get it again and then again, from what we know.
Well, you don't want to be that Czech singer. Did you hear about the Czech singer?
What about that?
Didn't want to get vaccinated, so decided that she would intentionally get COVID so she wouldn't have to get vaccinated. But the problem was she got COVID and she passed away.
With COVID. I saw the sort of the headline-grabbing tag to that story, which was exactly that. But I wasn't aware if there was any other comorbidities or like complicating factors in her passing, or was it the fact that the virus just got her?
I think it was just that.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
No. So, look, who knows? I mean, we were talking yesterday about the fact that the UK have just lifted all restrictions. They are clearly ahead of us in getting that Omicron wave, but they're just saying, no masks, no whatever, just live with it. So we might be there in 2 months. Who knows? I don't know.
Well, we might, but WA might not. As Hanson Nigel tells me off the SMS, the WA border reopening getting pushed back, or the indefinite...
it's an indefinite one too.
Non-opening of the border throws another curveball for Australian sport, the AFLW at the moment, WNBL, Big Bash is finishing. So that's,
A-League.
It's going to get through the A-League. And then, of course, the AFL as well. I don't think my man Mark is going to be opening up anytime soon.
No.
He's looking for triple vaccination rates of 90%.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on over there.
No.
He's decided that, there was a very important piece of miscommunication in his press conference last night, that 5,000 people a day are in hospital over in the eastern states, which is not true. It's total at the moment that is up to 5,000. So I'm not sure if it was a purposeful scaremongering tactic or whether it was just a slip of the tongue, which is quite possible in pressure situations like he's going through. But, yeah, that was $1. I took the $1, put it in a multi with you wearing a new shirt today, and I've landed that double, which is great news.
Good one.
And you look sharp too, just by the way.
Although I'm slightly concerned about it, just a slight issue with the shirt.
The sleeve?
It's flapping around a bit, isn't it? But the sleeve, but the problem is that it fitted better when I bought it than it does today. And I can't blame the washing of the shirt or the putting in the dryer of the shirt because it hasn't been worn before.
Right. Okay, well, it looks good. As long as you know it looks good. That's all you need to know at this stage. So the WA border is going to cause all sorts of dramas again. I'm sure there's a lot of sporting bodies at the moment scheduling a meeting, a Zoom perhaps, at 9 a.m. this morning to go, righto, he's done it again, how are we going to cope with this?
Yeah.
And the AFL will be top of the list on that.
Yeah, so 2 months for pretty much, it's actually less than 2 months before that first season, because first round, because I think the season starts a week earlier than so that mid-March area, so yeah, who knows? So
how's it going to affect the Shield? Like, because we've got two, the AFLW teams are here at the moment. They're in, not a bubble, but they're over here.
Mm.
It's going to be a 4 or 5 week stint. That looks like it's going to be a lot longer than that.
And see, the thing with that sort of thing is that, apart from the logistics of it all, just the money, extra money it costs. Mm. Because, you know, if we go back to the start of the season, remember we were going to have for the Big Bash, we actually were going to have DRS and all those sorts of things, and they decided that they didn't have the money to do it. And then all of a sudden they've needed to find all this additional money to be able to have Perth based in Melbourne, and at the moment all the teams are based in Melbourne, and then they shoot out to cities at times to play games. Well, that's again a significant additional cost for Cricket Australia, the fact that there are no, those one day games against New Zealand aren't being played, so it's becoming costly again, and we haven't even started, you know, the AFL season, was to where, well, there might be a situation where Fremantle and West Coast, at least for the start of the season, are going to be based in Melbourne.
I would think that's very likely.
Mm.
Very likely for that to be happening.
Which will include training and everything. Yep. So, I mean, that's a massive cost.
Yep. Seriously, can we cut WA off and push them out into the Indian Ocean, asks Nico off the SMS. Well, they've got a lot of tools that could probably do that over there. There's mining tools. They could probably chop it off. they'd probably be happy to do it, most of them. But we love them. We love them over there. And Rev in Albany, we need to hear from him, see how he's going through all this. A couple of balloons up in G-Town over the racetrack. Great news. That is great news. None in the city just at this stage. I would like to see a few floating around. I need a little bit of a Friday laugh. What about this? I need to play you some audio from a moment recently in the US. Funny stuff. Tori Yorgi is a news reporter for WSAZ in West Virginia. They're having some weather condition challenges over there at the moment. And she was filing a story back to Tim the anchor back in the studio.
What's his name?
Tim IRRR.
Right.
So Tori and Tim. Don't worry about the surnames. Tori's talking back to Tim in the studio. Tori gets hit by a car. And I want you to listen to Tori and her resilience and her mental fortitude to just keep pressing on and making sure the story gets told.
Okay.
You've done this, Waddy. You've been out and about as a journo on the spot.
Yep.
So you will appreciate this perhaps better than I. And then the response of Tim as all this is unfolding. It's most humorous stuff. Let's have a listen to Tori get hit by a car.
Tori Yorgi joins us now live in Dunbar. And Tori, they're not seeing any flakes but wet roads. And now we're starting to experience, unfortunately, in freeze-thaw, we see this, water main breaks.
I just got hit by a car, but I'm okay, Tim.
That's first for you on TV, Tori.
Woo! We're all good.
Are you okay?
I'm okay. Yeah, you know, that's live TV for you. It's all good. I actually got hit by a car in college, too, just like that.
Wow.
I am so glad I'm okay.
Yeah.
You're okay. You're okay. We're all good. This is, you know what? It's one
sure
woman
you're
man.
Okay, Tori?
We're good, Tim. Ma'am,
you, sure
you
okay?
are so sweet, and you are okay.
I am so okay.
It is all good. You know, oh, Lord.
So you...
You know, it's my last week on the job, and I think this would happen.
So you were
specifically
bumped in,
to me, Tim.
Were you bumped down low, Tori, or were you hit up high? I couldn't really tell from looking.
Oh, I don't even... Do you know if I was bumped down low or up high, sir?
I just saw you disappear.
I don't even know. I don't even know, Tim. My whole life just flashed before my eyes.
Oh,
but this is live TV and everything's okay. I thought I was in a safe spot, but clearly we might need to move the camera over a bit.
Yeah.
So let me do that while I'm thinking of it.
Now, just to set the stage for you once again, Tori's in an area right now. There would have been a water main break. So there are.
So Tori and Tim have had a moment there. And I'm not sure that our man Tim showed the concern perhaps that I would have shown or should have been shown towards someone who'd just been hit by a car live on television.
It sounded a bit like Michael Christian trying to work out whether it was head-high contact or body contact.
So the investigation is to the contact, the point of contact, was hilarious. So she gets hit by a car. She announces that on the TV. And our man Tim comes back with, well, that's a first for you on TV, Tori. What a loser.
And then she says she got hit back in college.
Yes.
Experienced campaigner.
And he comes back with, I just saw you disappear out of screen. Oh, God, that's funny. And then as she retells the story, he mutters under his breath a little bit, but it's just audible enough. Well, that can happen. Iron Man Tim couldn't give a fat rat about Tori's impending death. Oh, I saw that yesterday and I laughed my guts out. Simple things.
So Darren Wheeldon areas when he got hit by the taxi.
Well, that's a first round TV, Tori. Good luck to you, Tori. You're doing great things for the community. And she was by herself, like no cameraman. She was having to reposition the camera herself. Oh, God.
Yeah, well, that was the thing is, it would appear that she didn't have a cameraman to be able to sort of say, hey, there's a car coming, you might want to get out of the way.
Yeah. No, she had to reposition the camera. And
is there vision
the
of this?
Yeah, there is. It's funny stuff. My man, Tim. Oh, what a way to start your Friday. Craig Gabriel's a tenor of many, many fine songs through the journey. He loves singing in the media centre at the Australian Open. He's back with us on day five. Good morning, Craig.
Morning. Well, I caught up with Placido Domingo at Madison Square Garden. I was working on an event called the BNP Paribas Showdown, and he is a tennis fanatic. He loves his tennis.
Is he?
And yeah, he genuinely does. And he was there, so I met him and was escorting him around because he wanted to meet Gabriela Sabatini and Monica Seles, who were also playing. So I've got a very nice picture with Placido. And as far as Sarah Brightman is concerned, she was on the same row as I was sitting on a Concorde flight.
On a Concorde? So that's up the front, Craig, surely.
Well, there is only one class on Concorde. It's not divided. It's just 100 seats of one class.
Is that right?
Yep.
How many people? There wouldn't be too many people that can say they've been on the Concorde, Craig, because they didn't fly very much.
No, well, it was only London, New York, or Paris, New York, but I did it about 16 times, I think.
It's a very sexy aircraft.
Yeah, how much quicker did it go compared to, say, 747?
Oh, much quicker. It was half the time. I mean, there was one flight I did. It was 2 hours, 57 minutes. And then there was another one, and I remember this quite well because it was very amusing. It took 3 hours, 23 minutes, and the captain apologized because we were a bit slower than normal.
Wow, there was a lot of traffic.
So why haven't we progressed? Why don't we fly faster
because
now?
The Concorde fell out of the sky one day, and they decided that, wow, it's a bit dangerous.
No, that's a problem.
It was a very, very incredibly expensive plane to fly with the fuel issues, and you only had 100 seats on it. It was a small plane. If you know, like now, you can still, if you stand up out of your seat on an aircraft, I'm not talking about a small plane, a regular sized plane. You know, you can still stand up in front of your seat. You couldn't really do that on Concorde. I mean, it was so small, you'd be hitting your head on the roof locker all the time.
It was a sexy aircraft. I was in an aircraft back then.
Oh yeah, and nothing. It waited for no other aircraft. It was always given priority.
Well, say good day to Sarah for us next time you see her. But tell me, is Daniil Medvedev within his rights to be disappointed and annoyed with the behaviour of the crowd last night in his fourth set victory over Nick Kyrgios?
Yeah, but I'm not figuring why they're doing this or what the reason is behind it.
That's really annoying.
It is very annoying. It's not booing as such. It is this noise that happens with Ronaldo and what the connection is between Ronaldo and football and the jeering or whatever it is and tennis. I've got no idea. So,
I think Craig
does it, and others are sheep.
Yeah, I think Craig. The reality is, it's the Kyrgios fan, the younger fan that is into soccer or into Ronaldo, into social media, that is into Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah, but, you know, it happened on the previous round. It happened on another match. I can't remember which one it was now. So it's silly. I mean, it just suddenly cropped up. It hasn't happened before.
All right. So
players don't understand it. I don't.
Public service announcement to anyone listening and tell all your friends, just stop it. It's crap.
So what would you prefer, that or the Fanatics?
Oh, geez, neither.
or the people that would whistle when Cyclops used to go off when there was a fault.
Those are silly little things. But this is like, it sort of makes the other player feel really, disliked and for no reason whatsoever. And that's, prompted Daniil's comment last night that people are doing this are low class. I mean, they're not understanding. And what is it? Something to do, anyway, something similar to what he said. But, it's just frustrating. There's no reason for it.
So from the match perspective, it was a typical Nick Kyrgios match. He played well in patches. It was very entertaining. It was intense. But unfortunately, he couldn't win. Now, we're talking about one of the best players in the world that he was up against. But it was just that thing of Kyrgios can do it for patches, but he can't sustain it for long enough.
Yeah, look, he hasn't played that much with all his injuries.
Yes, he hasn't. And
also having COVID just before the Australian Open, so he was in isolation for a while. It's just not excuses. This is just facts. Some people say I'm an apologist, and it's not that. I mean, look at the damn facts. And that's just what it comes down to. I mean, Medvedev was saying that, when you're not playing that much, and there are reasons, you're not quite in the rhythm on those crucial little points that can change things. And Medvedev is. I mean, he's the number two ranked player in the world. But Nick was very, very good last night. It was a, as you say, entertaining match. He gave it pretty much all he could. And he said that he's pretty proud of his effort last night. And, it would be encouraging for what he's got coming up. But he also said, I'm not thinking of what's coming up. I'm just, taking it as it comes.
So let's get into the first leg of the quaddie tomorrow, Dino, if you don't mind. Race number six is that race over the 1,200 at the Valley. A benchmark 70 affair, $75,000 up for grabs. And there are 11 going around. And Maramenko for the Hawks stable, with Freddie Kersley in the saddle, is the favourite at the tab at $3.60.
Merrim, as opposed to the clothes and the flowery things, Marameco.
Oh, I don't know what that means. Yeah. Rama never did this. Rama never interrupted threw to Dino. What? I'm not sure about this. Dino, sorry, Marameco's favourite. What do you say?
I say it's got a very good chance, Daniel, but I was really taken with the first up effort of number 11, Sharp Response. He's a three-year-old taking on the older horses here, but he's down in the weights, and he got beaten by a very good horse first up from the Hawks stable in Clemenceau, and I think he'll just be a bit fitter for that run, and I think he's a great winning chance. But Maramenko's got a good chance. He's had two recent jump outs, looks to be going well and ready to go first up. And the other one I'd include is Invincible Jet. He's been chasing a very fast speed at both runs this time in. He might just get outside the lead a bit easier here, and he might be ready to peak third up. I think he's the other little chance, but happy to think the three-year-old Sharp Response is a very good chance of winning here.
All right, so Sharp Response, Dino has been impressed by. The punter's been impressed by Sharp Response.
Has been the best backed runner at this stage, 420 into 370. Maramenko, a $3.60 favourite. Then we've got Elberg on the next line, I'm betting at $8. Deep Dive at $10. Dino, I'm going to fire three questions at you here. Elberg racing very well. The big negative, obviously, just the one win from 27 career starts. What did you make of the toppy? Deep Dive has the in the boat form and a good record over the distance. And you're on top selection, Sharp Response, trained by a really up and coming trainer who could be a big name in years to come.
Could be. Julius Sandu hits the mark really well, and the horses present well, they race well, and they race tough. So, I like backing his horses. Elberg, I think's maybe a better horse down the straight, if anything. So, the lack of winning strike rate and back and around the valley are the concerns. And Deep Dive, even with the claim, he's still got the 60 kilos, and there's a little bit of pressure there on his outside. He'll run a good race, and he'd probably be, he and Rogue Star would be the other two that'd be, if you're going wider, but I think he can trim this leg up.
Trim this leg up, and that's what we are going to do for the first leg of the quaddie tomorrow, says Dino. Whitey, I knew I said Rama then. Whitey, can you please repeat the numbers for the first leg of the quaddie?
No, I can't because I thought that Dean was going to sort of say them. I've only got two.
The Oh, this isn't working.
No, it's a bad start. I wasn't concentrating.
Have you got a pen?
No, I have. I'm ready to go. But I know 11 and 9 were mentioned, but there was another one. I don't know what the number was.
Throw in number 10.
Absolute chaos.
Absolute chaos is what it is. 11, 9, and 10. Okay, all right.
That's all. I'll be right from there.
Look, it's the first week, so there's an element of leeway.
I've got a milkshake on my mind.
Well, there's no,
there's what no flavor?
There. The caramel with malted milk.
Would I be in your good books forever if after this I went downstairs to the cafe and bought back milkshakes?
No, not downstairs. They don't do normal milkshakes. They do Chinese tea.
Well, that's if you ask for Chinese tea.
No.
If you ask for a milkshake, they'll give you a milkshake.
I've asked for one. They said they don't do normal milkshakes. They do Chinese milk tea.
Was it good?
I'm suggesting not.
Where's Rama?
It's like tiger tea or something.
Where's Rama?
It had ice in it.
Come on, Rama. Get off the couch and come back on a Friday.
Don't go downstairs, Quinny.
We need you. We need you. 11, 9, 10. They are your numbers for the first leg of the quaddie tomorrow at Moonee Valley. Race number 7 is the second leg of the quaddie. 1,500-metre affair. Benchmark 84. $130,000 up for grabs. I'd like to win that. And we've got, Dino, we've got 12 going around tomorrow. And race number, horse number 4 for B and JD Hayes with John McNeil on the saddle. Fundraiser jumping into gate 3 is favourite at the tab at around about $3.30.
And he should be too, Daniel. He was tremendous first up, running fourth down the straight at Flemington. It was a day that he wanted to be out wide on the track, and he was closer to the inside. He ran really well. He's a really good summer sort of 1,600-metre horse, so he's right in the middle of that at 1,500 metres. He was scratched from yesterday at Warrnambool, wanting to dodge a really good horse in Tuvalu, and that's fair enough. I think he's found the better race here for more money. So he's very well placed, number 4 Fundraiser. To beat 10 Galactic Fury. I think the Mar Eustace stable hold the main dangers. Galactic Fury drops 10 kilos on winning last start, and he's raced quite well here at the Valley in better company. And the other one is Unanimous, who's just got a bit of an awkward habit of missing the start. If he begins cleanly, he could race up in the first 4 or 5 here and run well, and I think he's next best. But it looks a terrific race for Fundraiser to get back in the winner's list.
All right, Fundraiser will be top of the pops tomorrow, says Dino. Is that what they're saying at the tab?
Another race where Dino's on top selection has been the best backed at this stage. Fundraiser was a 390 joint favourite with Unanimous initially. Fundraiser 390 into 330. Unanimous now a 370 second elect. Galactic Fury at 8, but Fundraiser heads the market and has been the best backed.
All right, Fundraiser, all the raids there in race number 7, which means all we need from Whitey now is a recap of those numbers for the second leg of the quaddie, if in fact he was listening at all this time around.
Daniel, just the 3 again in leg number 2, and those numbers are 4, 10 and 12.
What a marked improvement that was.
So like Nick Quinn, just skinny in the first 2 legs of the quaddie.
Well, the first 2 are very important. The third leg is often the most difficult, as far as quaddies have been known, certainly in my world anyway, and I think we need to sort that out today. In preparation for tomorrow. Race number 8 is at 5 o'clock tomorrow. I think Dean Lester will be paying particular attention to this race. Over the 1,200 metres, $130,000 up for grabs again. Benchmark 84 affair. And there's a horse in this race that I think Dean likes. 14 horses going around. The favourite is number 11, In the Boat, who's had 3 consecutive victories for Lindsay Smith. Lana Kelly in the pilot seat tomorrow, claiming a couple of kegs. Dino, In the Boat is favourite at $3. What say you?
I say I hope he wins. And I think, as a little shareholder in him, I think he can win again. He's an absolute beauty. He just gets out in front, runs along, and dares them to beat him. And I think the Valley should really suit him. And he's Alana Kelly's now had a ride on him. I think he'll make his own luck again and take a bit of running down. I think there's some good opposition here, though. Pioneer River's going really well for the Mar Eustace stable. Won 2 in a row down the straight. Now has to bring that form to Moonee Valley, but I think can run well. 1 Curran, certainly the best performed horse in the race, and he's been running in high-pressure 1,000, 1,100-metre races. I think 1,200 metres here will suit. Just a bit of an awkward draw to overcome, but he's just got a bit of class on his side, so I respect him. And 6 Exeter, who just saves his best form for 1,200 at the Valley. He didn't have much luck last start at Caulfield. He got chopped out for a run at a crucial stage, but he can certainly run well. But I think the boat will give them something to chase again.
Does that excite you, Dino, when you've got a decent one floating around?
Nervous, excited, relieved when it's over. Yeah, all of the above. But no, it's exciting to think that he's, you know, coming through the grades really well, and hopefully can continue again tomorrow.
What kind of spectator are you, Dino? Do you get rowdy? Do you give them a cheer, or are you cool, calm, and collected in the run?
No, I'm sort of with him. I'm always watching for what's coming late. No, I'm pretty pretty analytical, really. Yeah. Sometimes, certainly give them a big cheer.
I'd be giving a big cheer if we had a good chance at Mooney Valley. $130,000 up for grabs. That's what I'd be doing, Quinny. What about the punters? What are they saying about In the Boat or some other runners
They're
in the race?
They're backing Dino to be cheering once more. $390 into $290 for In the Boat. Pioneer River, an $8 second elect. Sacred Palace, $850 in from $9. And Curran, a $9 chance. Two questions other than the champion and hopefully winner In the Boat. What do you make of Curran, Dino? Because the horse has been racing well, but it's been a little bit of an interesting career, jumping up and down over distances, back to the Valley where he's had one start for one win. Do you think he's going as well as he has in campaigns past?
Yeah, I do. I think he's just been in races where there have been pretty extreme speeds, that the Enthahar race at Caulfield and then the Murabi race at Caulfield. I think, yeah, he's probably looking for the 1,200-metre tempo a bit more here, but the draw just means he's going to get back a bit, but he is a very talented horse and a very consistent horse. So, no, I'm thinking in this grade he's well-placed.
And you're leaving out Sacred Palace, the stablemate to In the Boat. Is that more of a thought that you think Sacred Palace might be back and just too much to do and hopefully the on-top selection and hopefully winners established a race-winning lead?
Yeah, I think he's probably going to end up nearly four back the fence, Sacred Palace. So he's going to need a lot of luck, but he is a talent and he ran really well first up. He'll be strong late, but I think he's probably the next in line.
All right, that's the summary of race number 8, third leg of the quaddie tomorrow at Mooney Valley. Whitey, can you please recap the numbers for the punters at home?
I can, Daniel. The third leg, the numbers are 11, 8, 1 and 6.
Let's have a look at the last leg of the quaddie. Because that's what we are here for, in essence, to go through that. Race number 9 is that race tomorrow at Mooney Valley. It's over the 1,200 metres, and we've got 12 going around, Dino, to finish off the quaddie legs for us tomorrow. And down the bottom again, a lot of deep numbers in the favouritism mode this meeting at Mooney Valley tomorrow. Number 11, Patrika Gold. One start, one win for Mitch Friedman, and favourite at 420 at tab.com.au. Can it back it up?
It can. I think it's very well found by the market. It was a good win. It was very well backed to win at Terang, and it was a nice win. Drops in weight for winning and just takes on a few sort of experienced mares here, and that's the key. It's a fillies and mares race, so they're always tricky and tough end of the quaddy. So we've gone fairly light the first three legs. We'll load up in the last leg here. I'm going to go with number 6, Gabira. It's a mare I've got a fair bit of time for. I thought she ran really well first up. She ran third behind In the Boat at Caulfield. And closed off well, and courtesy of the Mooney Valley Racing Club, they put up all the gallops there that through the week, and she galloped there on Tuesday and looked to go really well, handled the track well. So I'm going to go with her number 6 to beat 2 Maria Mia, who was quite a spectacular win here 3 starts back, and then her next 2 runs have been quite good, and the last one was over a longer distance. Freshened up back to 1,200 metres off barrier 1. I think she'll use her speed and run well. 11, Patrika Gold, as mentioned. She's a talent, I think. This is an interesting challenge for her second up, but she's obviously got a good ability, and Mitch Friedman not sort of one to throw them in on a whim and run them in this sort of grade. 10, Estrel Park, racing well, got a great draw, and with the claim is well weighted. But I'm giving chances to 1, Galgani, who's trialled really well, and 7, Gloves Are Off, who does race well here at the Valley and is in good form and gets a claim for T.A. Nugent. But tough finish, but I'm with Gabira.
All right, Gabira there on top selection for Dino. What's the on-top selection for the punters at TAB, please?
Currently a $6 chance, the third elect at that quote, and the second best backed in the race. The money has come for the favourite Patrika Gold, $6 into $4.20 to step up in grade and make it 2 from 2.
Rightio. So a bit of a wide finish for Dino after being a little bit narrow through the early rounds here for the quaddie tomorrow at Mooney Valley. Whitey, can you please recap the numbers in the last leg?
I can, Daniel. Those numbers 6, 2, 11, 10, 1, and 7.
Now, you're not going to believe this. Our listeners haven't learned from their mistakes in 2021, Dino, and they don't pay attention all the way through for the quaddy leagues when we go through the numbers here on the Friday form. Paul in the city says, can you please repeat the numbers? I was downstairs drinking a Blue Heaven Chinese milk tea, but they had Radio Hong Kong on, not RSN. That's a setback for Paul, but he needs the numbers. Hi, guys. Missed the quaddy numbers as I was making a milkshake to bring all the boys to the yard. Can you please repeat them? From Khalees. Great to have Khalees listening over there in the States. Half, I was on the laptop sorting out the AFLW fixture while setting up a paddock at the back of Elmore to host the 2026 Comm Games while sipping a bubble tea and missed the quaddy numbers. Can you please repeat them again?
What are the bubbles in a bubble tea? Is it just ice, or are they put like other things in it?
It's air.
Air.
Air. It's a bubble.
How do they
to dispute that.
How do they make the bubble?
I might go down and ask them.
How do they make the bubble? What's the bubble?
What would you do if I said I'm going for milkshakes and came back with one?
I'd tip it down the sink.
Can you please repeat quality numbers? I had to run home and swap my shirt after I popped a few buttons. One too many caramel milkshakes. There's a lot of milkshake-themed listeners out there this morning. You've really hit a nerve, you two, with your conversation about that. Can you get Whitey to read the numbers again, please? I missed them as I was writing my application for the coaching job for the Pommy cricket team, says ND in Belgrade. We've got international listeners.
In Belgrade?
Yep.
Belgrade.
Belgrade, they love it.
Belgrade or Belgrave?
It says Belgrade. We've got a lot of people out there. So don't suggest that we don't have international listeners. And this one came through early doors as well. And I've got to find it, but I don't think I'm going to have time to do that. So I won't. There's a lot of people having some issues. Whitex, so can you please recap the numbers for the quaddy tomorrow at Mooney Valley?
Okay, first leg, 11, 9 and 10. The second leg, 4, 10 and 12. The third leg, 11, 8, 1 and 6. And the final leg, 6, 2, 11, 10, 1, and 7.
Would have liked a little bit more timbre in your voice then.
I was off mic.
So some Craig Willis areas would have been nice there from you. They are your numbers for the quaddy tomorrow at Mooney Valley. The first one for 2022 on the Breakfast Club. Hopefully a winning one to set the agenda. Dino, what about the world famous formula bet? Who are you playing for this week?
We are playing for Jeffrey Mitchell-Moore of Pasco Vale. And for Jeffrey, we're having $40 the win race 5, number 2, Yulong Command. $40 the win race 7, number 4, Fundraiser. $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 5, number 2, into race 7, number 4. That's for Jeffrey Mitchell-Moore of Pasco Vale.
Good luck to you, Jeffrey. First time in 2022 in the Breakfast Club formula bet. Quinny, 5274.
Yulong Command currently $2.25. Fundraiser $3.30. The all up comes to $7.42 pre multiplier.
$7.42. Is that still going, that multiplier?
It is indeed. Right. Never been better. Especially in venue.
What happens in venue?
I think it's a little more generous.
Is it?
I think so.
How do they work that out?
Well, how do you work that out?
Trent still won't tell me.
Pretty funky technology to make that happen. Although I did go past. It's funny you say that, actually. I was at the traffic lights next to a tab one day. Walking, not in the car, walking. Just trying to cross the road. And I decided to have a little bit of a. See what was going on.
A luck tester?
Yeah, a bit of a luck tester. And it did say venue mode. And it wasn't actually in the building. I was outside the building.
Close enough.
Near enough. I get a better little multiplier that way, do I?
I think so.
Right.
You just have to be close enough.
Well, in the venue or outside having a breath of fresh air?
So you're saying at the tab, near enough is good enough.
Let's get to the Whitey Wishmaker.
The Whitey Wishmaker, the Quinny...
No. No, you know what it is? It's the Ramaruffy.
Right.
We've got to be respectful.
Well, let's get to that.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. The perfect balance of power and refinement. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger.
Vroom, that's how fast the Rammer Ruffy goes every week when Dino selects it for our punters out there. Where are we looking at tomorrow?
Found this a very difficult task, Daniel. I think a lot of fairly well-found runners will be in the money tomorrow. But I'm going to race 4, number 3, Coup de Tonnerre. I'm going to forgive him for his last run. And before that, he was going very well. Jamie Carter ride, hoping he can bounce back to his best. Race 4, number 3.
4, number 3, Coup de Tonnerre. Matt Kamani, Jamie Carr. That's always a pretty good combination as far as I'm concerned. Quinny, what's the market say?
950 the win, hey. 270 the place.
All right, 950, 270 is a nice way to open the account for this season on the Breakfast Club on the Friday form. That is good business. 17 to 8 on a Friday morning. The Women's Asian Cup kicks off tonight. The Mighty Matildas take on Indonesia. And who better to talk about that than Amy Chapman herself, a former Matilda, and will be a big part of the Channel 10 coverage of the Women's Asian Cup. And she joins us on the line. Amy, good morning.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you. Great to have you with us. Very excited to kick off this the tournament tonight. What do you feel when the Matildas go out there in a big tournament like this?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I think there's been a lot of question marks on some of the friendlies they've had over the last 18 months, but they do tend to turn it on in tournament mode, and I think they'll do it again this time.
So we've in the groups that we've got, and the group that we're drawn in, we've got Indonesia, Philippines and Thailand. We play Indonesia tonight. In terms of, and we always talk about this when it comes to world football, a group of death. Is it a group of death?
No, it is not a group of death. If you had to look at all three, it's probably middle pack, but given that there's some of these countries are the first time they've ever been in this kind of tournament, the tournament will get tougher and tougher as it goes on. And as Australia gets out of this pool stage to the next one, they'll meet fierce rivals. The stage is set to meet the fierce rivals of Japan in the final game. So I think, for me, I hope that plays out, and I think it will. But, it's an interesting mix. I think Thailand will be the toughest match of this pool, but I also think that these kind of teams can change a lot in 2 to 4 years. A little bit of investment goes a long way.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually. And just on the Matildas, I mean, the Olympic campaign didn't perhaps go to plan or as they would have liked, didn't end up with the medal. So they would have been disappointed with that. Is this a chance to redeem or is this a building block towards the Women's World Cup?
Bit of both, to be honest. They felt like they fell just short and probably deserved more in the Olympics. They've tried a lot of different things. They're looking for some defenders in these friendlies throughout. Mm. And they do have a bit of pressure on their shoulders to perform here. They're ranked, I think, second highest in an Asian team in the world ranking. So, but that's sort of, you take that with a grain of salt because performance mode is all that matters. And they'll be wanting to take this off Japan. Japan's beaten them both in the last two Asian Cup tournaments. Yes, the Matildas have already qualified, obviously, as host of the Women's World Cup. So there's a lot on the line for a whole different reasons for different countries, but certainly the trophy is what the Matildas are chasing.
Amy, what are you liking from what you're seeing from the Matildas at the moment?
I think from what I'm hearing, that there's a really good positive morale amongst the camp. They've had a lot of injuries and a lot of sort of COVID precautions and not able to have a full squad. So for the first time, we will see a full squad. Aside from those, I think there's Chloe Legazo has a ACL, so she won't return until the World Cup. But there's also a really good mixture of youngsters coming out of the Women's A-League here as well. So there's a handful of those who've managed to take the step up. And against the likes of Indonesia, these attackers and strikers will get a lot of ball and a lot of opportunity to score their first goal potentially for the Matildas.
And the coach, Tony Gustafsson's been in the chair for a little while now. There was some criticism leading up to the Olympics and through that, I suppose, about a defensive problem that he hasn't been able to fix. Is that the biggest challenge that they face moving towards this tournament and, of course, the Women's World Cup?
Yeah, definitely. We are in a bit of a golden generation with the Matildas right now, and you need a contingency plan, essentially, because we've got plenty enough to get us to the home World Cup next year. But what happens next after that? And I think that defensive role and maybe even that holding midfield role, there's not a lot of youth coming through in those positions, plenty of attacking talent. But the more we see the Matildas playing, the more we're going to have players come through who are looking and keen to make that step up. So, yeah, Tony's had, you know, a fair bit of pressure on him, but he's always said, judge me in tournament. So we will do just that.
we will absolutely do just that, Tony. Don't you worry about that. And just from a playing perspective, in tournaments like this, often we find players or one or two players jump up and announce themselves to the world. We've, as you said, it's a bit of a golden generation, so we've got some established names. But who are you looking forward to seeing really blossoming through this campaign?
Yeah, well, there's two youngsters that have really stepped up from the Women's A-League here. So that's Holly McNamara from Melbourne City and Courtney Vine from Sydney FC. Both of them incredible form right now, and I love it when players are picked on form and not reputation and not what they might be. These two players are playing really well, and when you're coming up against probably lesser teams in these early rounds, I hope they get an opportunity. And they've got some world-class skill, but it's just can they take it to that next level is going to be the question. So I'm excited to see them. And, of course, the game on Monday is against the Philippines, which is the former Matildas coach, Alan Sajic, has stepped up to try and bring them up another level as well. So that'll be a fascinating story as well.
Yeah, well, actually, we spoke to Al, must have been just before Christmas.
Yeah, not that long ago.
Not that long ago, about that position and how excited he was to be back in international football in the women's game and the challenges that he faced, but also the opportunity that he's got to grow. Because as you said before, investment is coming in these regions and they are going to get better really, really fast. So would you expect under his tutelage that they could accelerate pretty quick?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know in the small time frame that he's had whether they'll be able to do a huge amount this tournament, but I mentioned this before, a little bit of investment in the right people, in the right platforms and resources in these countries goes a huge, huge way. So we've got the likes of Iran in here, India for the first time, their hosts. A little bit sad that they're not allowed to have some crowds because that would have really shown the state of, you know, the opportunity of women's football in India as well. So there's some fascinating side stories going on. And there's no better coach out there who's proven that they can coach women's football than Alan Sajic. So a great investment from the Philippines to bring him in.
Now, on Sunday in the AFLW, Carlton was supposed to be playing the Western Bulldogs in a real Pride Round match, which is well attended and well supported all the way through. And it's normally a very big day in the Moody household because Brianne and Celine are twins. And they're very, very good AFLW players. And I'm sure when the fixture comes out, this is the one that's circled by the family, but it's not to be. It's been a change. Bree Moody joins us from the Blues to talk about that this morning. Moods, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
A pleasure having you on. Is that something that is circled very quickly and the fixture comes out in the kitchen at the Moody household?
It definitely is, yes. It's the one that we get all the family and friends to, and Mum gets a joint Carlton Bulldogs Guernsey out of the cupboard. And, yeah, if we can as well, we try and organise some family to come down from Queensland, so... yeah, it's always the one that gets circled first. But, yeah, pretty unfortunate that we can't play it this year.
So a change...
Or not this weekend.
Yeah, a change in the fixture because the Dogs are having some challenges with the health and safety protocols at the moment. So the Blues are taking on the Lions and the Dogs are having the weekend off. Who had to break the news to Mum?
I think Celine got the early word. they weren't planning on training last night anyway, so... they had a bit of a team meeting before we actually got to the club. So I think she was the one to break the word. But, yeah, hopefully we're still able to play down the track or next year.
All these changes, Bree, how are you coping with them? I mean, Half's your coach and he keeps saying, oh, just follow the bouncing ball, and he doesn't seem too fussed about it. But as a player, is it starting to take its toll at all?
Oh, I think we were pretty well equipped heading into this season knowing that anything could happen. I mean... Half's favourite saying over the last couple of years has been everything's subject to change, and we've definitely learnt that that is our reality. So, yeah, I guess I'm pretty lucky that I'm in casual work and something like this doesn't affect me too much as I'm able to change my shifts around and that sort of thing. But I definitely feel for the girls that have, yeah, bigger commitments and that sort of thing. It would be quite annoying not knowing if the fixture's going to go to plan week by week or even... if the how many players we're going to have at training sessions and that sort of thing. So, yeah, everything is definitely subject to change.
Yeah, so you obviously go from playing on a Sunday in Melbourne to heading up to the Gold Coast, I think it is, to play on Tuesday night. Had you started looking at your opposition? Had you started to plan for playing the Bulldogs this week?
Yes. Yes, we definitely had, but I think something that's also worked in our favour is that we were planning to play Brisbane last week before
yeah, that's true.
To play Geelong. So, yeah, pretty lucky that we'd already started looking at them, and we'll just go back to that vision and talk a little bit more about them before Tuesday night.
So, half probably a question for you while Bree is here. Do you end up focusing more on what you're doing rather than the opposition? Has it kind of changed the way that you're preparing for games just in case this sort of thing happens, that it's all about you and not about... So you're kind of changing the way you coach?
Yeah, well, that's the crux of your prep. You've got to worry about what you're doing. But there's always an element of the opposition and knowing what they do and how you can stifle that or take something, one of their strengths away. So there's always that element. But I think probably the percentage of us versus them goes in our favour a bit more on the back of this because, as Bruce said, you just don't know what's going to happen. So everything's subject to change. Just control what you can, and we can control us That's all we can really control. So that makes sense. Moods for you. A great year last year. All Australian for you. You've won a Best and Fairest as a, in your first year in the competition in 2018. Was that second year? Was it?
Second year.
In 2018. So you've a Best and Fairest and All Australian. You're 24 now and really hitting your physical peak. What's next for you? What do you want to achieve out of this career for you?
I think it would be pretty special to get another All Australian team this year, and then hopefully see a few more of the Carlton girls in there with me. But I just want to keep developing my game. I feel very comfortable in the ruck now, so it'll be more about developing my game a bit more forward and helping the backs out as well. So just continuing to get fitter and develop my skills and continue to help the team out.
Glenn McFarlane is a milkshake lover, and he's probably got one at the Holden Centre this morning watching the Magpies train. Maka, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, guys. When you can see the chain of command here, guys. Summer breakfast. Quinny didn't even come into the studio.
he's one of those guys. The Ferrari doesn't just get rolled out in the paddock, mate. When it's highway driving required, and people paying attention, that's when the Ferraris come out. Don't worry about that. Hey, speaking of paying attention, we're all paying attention to Jordan De Goeyer. The Magpies released a statement last night about his reinstatement, and he's back at training today.
Yeah, back at training today, guys. That ends the three-month exile. It probably ends as good as Jordan De Goeyer was going to get it, I think, in that sense. So it feels like we've had a few of these last-chance saloons with Jordan De Goeyer, but we've got another one here, guys. The club's put it on him. Don't let it be said there's been no tension between the club and Jordan. Of course there has been. Jordan wanted to be back training. But the downgrading and the further downgrading of this charge to a second-degree harassment charge, no criminal conviction, which will be ratified on January 28th, now sees him back at training today and carrying on this year, the final year of his contract with Collingwood.
Okay, so were you surprised by that? And
Was that mouthful good?
What mouthful? I haven't got to yet. Were you surprised by that at all, Macca, that there's been an instant reinstatement, or was this always on the cards?
No, I reckon this was always on the cards. The way you were able to read, probably the last, couple of weeks, I think half, in the sense that this is the way that, when you pay for someone, a lawyer of Jacob Catland's, you have to pay a bit of money to get there, but you get the right option. And the video surveillance footage sort of certainly you pointed a better picture for Jordan De Goeyer in the sense of downgrading the charge. And that's what he always wanted. He always said to Collingwood, this charge will be downgraded. Don't worry about that. Personally, I think Collingwood did the right thing. I know that my good mate Mick McGowan doesn't. He thinks that the club should have let him back even when he was facing these charges. But the club is pretty strong, and I think they need to be, guys. We know where we are at with Jordan De Goeyer. He needs to knuckle down. This is the biggest year of his footy career really coming in, guys. Last year of a contract, looking to bed down a contract that could take him through till his 30s. Potentially $1 million a year. It's a crucial year. So I think the club did the right thing. They've had enough of the off-field stuff. They really want to see some more of the on-field stuff now.
So it's conditional, this reinstatement. There's, according to the statement made by the Collingwood last night, acceptance of continuing and further support off-field and full cooperation with health professionals providing such support and a commitment to permanent part-time work with the Salvation Army.
Yeah, they want to see something from Jordan. And he's worked a bit with the Salvation Army in the past. If you remember back a couple of the other indiscretions, he's been there. Collingwood's got a great association with the Salvation Army through Brendan Noddle as well. The acceptance of further support, and Collingwood stressed that, I reckon, guys. They've put a lot of support into Jordan over the journey and particularly with health professionals and the like. They want to see some results now. We saw on the field, guys, last year, that second half of the year, he finished fourth in the Best and Fairest and looked like he was going into this, this contract year, full of steam, but it quickly burnt out in that sense with that moment in New York. But at least now he'll be back at training today. The club has basically said that and stressed to a number of people that at least, Craig McRae and Scott Pendlebury have been, having ongoing discussions with De Goeyer, but there has been a little bit of tension, guys, there's no doubt. So it's going to be fascinating to see what actually happens. And fingers crossed, he gets this message, and what Collingwood's telling us is this is the last message, and if he doesn't, he'll be playing in a different jumper next year.
time to talk some cricket because we've got the eliminator and the qualifier on this weekend. And the Big Bash has been a big, long campaign. And if you're a fan of the Perth Scorchers, which many people are because of the way they play their cricket, you'll be very, very pleased with the man in charge, Adam Voges, who's led them to the top of the table after the 14 home and away games. He joined us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are well, mate, and really appreciate your company on a Friday morning ahead of a qualifying final, getting ready to play against the Sixers to take on to win that game and go into the grand final. Are you confident you can?
Yeah, big weekend of cricket coming up after a long campaign, as you mentioned. Yeah, we're really excited about tomorrow night's game. Got the eliminator tonight at the MCG, and then we're another final for the Scorchers and the Sixers tomorrow night at Marvel. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity for us, obviously, to finish top two. We get a double chance, but we also get that opportunity, if we can win tomorrow night, to go straight into a grand final. So there's plenty of incentive.
Yeah, and you talk about another final for the Scorchers and the Sixers, but the Scorchers' finals record and ability to get to finals in the Big Bash since inception is quite remarkable. What is the secret?
I don't know the exact secret, but I'm incredibly proud of the way our guys have gone about this campaign. We've been on the East Coast for almost the entirety of the campaign. We've had our fair share of hurdles along the way with a few COVID cases and unavailability of players. But I think what it has done is galvanised our squad, and we've seen multiple guys contribute along the way. And hopefully we're getting somewhere near full strength coming into the business end. But, yeah, look, really, really pleased with the way the guys have gone about it this year.
Adam, congratulations on what you've been able to do. I mean, you just touched on a few of the frustrations along the way, but to be permanently on the road this campaign, at least after the start, the players you've lost for national duties, COVID, you keep rolling out a really consistent game plan and the players continually execute it consistently.
Yeah, and that's been the pleasing bit. I think it hasn't really mattered the 11 that we've put on the park. I think we're really clear on the way that we want to go about our cricket. Doesn't always work, but, yeah, full credit to, I think, Ashton Turner, our captain. I think he's done a remarkable job leading the side. Took over the captaincy last year, but has really put his stamp on the team this year. And I think the way that he's led the boys on the field has been outstanding. And a few of the young guys that have come in have taken their opportunities. Curtis Patterson up the top, I think, has done a terrific job. Matt Kelly, when he's had opportunities, has been a match winner for us. Even Nick Hobson the other day in his first game got 40-odd. So just having those guys come in, play with real confidence and be able to contribute has been really nice to see.
So the idea of playing at Marvel Stadium, and you've clearly played well there. Is there a reason why you play so well at that particular venue?
I don't think it's always been the case. I think, again, one of the things that we've done better this year is play on those the drop-in wickets or the lower, slower wickets that aren't the same as what we used to at the Wacker or Optus Stadium. But the way that our players have developed their skill to be able to play on these sort of wickets has been great, and we've won all three games at Marvel this year, and it's a ground that we've got used to and got used to playing well at. So, when we did have to nominate a home ground, we were pretty quick to choose Marvel, just knowing that we've had some recent success there, and hopefully that can continue tomorrow night.
Now, knowing Mitch Marsh as well as you do, you've been involved with Mitch for a long time. The innings the other night, I know he's played some very good innings over the last period of time, but just the clean ball striking the other night off a bit of a break. Do you get shocked with what he's doing, or because you're immersed with him all the time, nothing surprises?
He's been amazing. I think that was his fourth man of the match performance in six games that he's played for us, and in terms of ball striking and how hard he hits, and we're well aware about that. You put your life in your own hands every time you throw balls to him. he's just been incredible. He's taken his game to a whole new level. Over the last 6 to 8 months, we saw what he did in the World Cup, and he's continued that brilliant form on for us. So, he's been brilliant. He's had a lot of the accolades, and rightly so. But again, I've been really pleased with what the other guys have been able to do around that as well.
We were talking during the week, Adam, about the emotional investment required, we think, a bit more from the fans for the Big Bash, you know, backing for your team and really being passionate about it. It's a relatively young competition still, but emotional investment's really important for success of these competitions. Is there rivalry and real fierce feeling towards the Sixers in terms of, from a Scorchers perspective, because of the history you've got, but also the fact that, you know, they're the ones trying to stop you from doing what you want to achieve?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a rivalry. I think there's great respect. They've won the last two BBLs. They're a terrific team. We've been fortunate to be on the right end of our two encounters so far this year, but that doesn't really mean too much going into tomorrow. They're a terrific team. They're full of match winners, and like I say about every game in this competition, and that's the beauty of it, you need to be bringing your best game to be competitive and win. So that's what we'll be looking to do. Yeah, it's a great story that we're going to be playing against the Sixers again, and that rivalry will continue.
Do you prefer to chase or set the target?
It's pretty clear that we like batting first. Having said that, if there's a bit of dew around at Marvel with a later start, then we always have to take that into consideration. But, I think Ashton Turner won 10 of his first 12 bat tosses, and I think we batted first in most of them. So I don't think we'll defer too far away from that.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.